the lights out until it's bright out. Oh, just another lonely night. Are you willing to sacrifice your life?
They're staying in the shadows. It's called probing. Make sure things are all clear.
Clear for what?
For the rest of the room.
You guys hear that?
He's out there.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I am your host, Tony Merkel, and I'm really glad that you're here. And I'm really glad to be here. If you've had an encounter or a story you'd like to share with me for the show, go ahead and email me at theconfessionalspodcast@gmail.com or go to the website, theconfessionalspodcast.com, hit the connection section, and you can reach me that way as well. I don't care what the stories are. It can be Bigfoot, UFOs, aliens, ghosts, government conspiracy, dog man, doesn't matter what it is. But if you've had an encounter story you'd like to share with me on the show, go ahead and shoot me an email. Also, I want to remind you guys that we're going to be doing that show, Get to Know the Host. So if you have any questions that you'd like to ask me for the show, go ahead and shoot me an email with those questions as well. Tonight, we have a great show coming up. David is coming on the show. He wants to share some of his paranormal experiences he's had throughout his life. So without any further delay, let's get to David. Okay, tonight I have a great guest coming on, David. David has actually contacted me through email a while back, and we were chatting back and forth and stuff. And it's great to have you on tonight, David. How are you?
Hey, Tony. Doing really good. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, man. David, are you a professor? I believe that's what you said to me at one point. Or you teach at a college or something like that?
No. I'm not a professor at all. I have a podcast called Jew and Gentile Show. It's on Jew and Gentile Radio. People can, it's on iTunes and all the other platforms. But I teach along with Aaron Marshall, at UNCW. It's University of North Carolina, Wilmington. We're not at the school, but we teach on campus and off campus. And so we teach, apologetics, which is, it's a Greek word, apologia, which means to give a defense. And what we get to give a defense for is Christianity. And I'm a Jew, David Halevi. That's my name, which just means the Levite, Halevi, the Levi. But I believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Jewish Messiah. Obviously there's most people on the planet don't believe that. One of the writers in the New Testament, name was Peter, and he said that we should always be able to give a defense for the hope that's within us. So we teach things that a lot of philosophical things. So what is truth? How do you know when something is true or false? We teach a lot of philosophical arguments for God. So just general theism. So how do you know there is a God? How can we know that God exists? Logical thinking. We teach critical thinking skills. So no, I'm not a professor, but been studying this stuff for a long time. I went to Institute of Jewish Studies in Philadelphia, kind of in your neck of the woods, and then went to Bible school and that kind of thing. So yeah.
Okay, that's really cool. Now, with you saying all that, is there any way people could contact you if they have questions? Because you just gave a great resume, and I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that might, want to ask you a few questions along those lines.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So, they can go to Facebook, Jew and Gentile Show. They can reach me at jewandgentilepodcast@gmail.com. That's jewandgentilepodcast@gmail.com. Or they can tweet at us at, Jew Gentile. So that's @Jew Gentile.
Awesome. That's great to know, because, you know, with all that you just laid down there and stuff, I'm sure there's people out there like, well, maybe he'd be a good person to ask the question I've been wondering for years. So that's great to know. Now, bringing you on tonight, you know, you have some experiences that you wanted to share that you experienced as a kid. And then later on in life, you experienced some other things. And I know one of the things that you experienced later on in life, last time we talked on the phone, I believe you said it happened like 6 months ago or something like that. We didn't talk about this in the pre-interview, but I definitely want you to share that with the audience tonight. But why don't you start with, you know, what happened to you as a kid?
Yeah. So when I was a kid, my father, was a postman, and, that's what he did for his full-time job. He was a mailman. And, you know, my family's Jewish, but, you know, we believe, in Christian beliefs, we believe that Jesus is the Messiah. So, he was also involved in ministry. And so he taught a local church congregation and taught Bible studies, that kind of thing. And so I, having said all that, our home life was actually very, very bad. Parents fought a lot. There was, just violence in the home. And so, felt very alone as a kid a lot of the time. You know, my brother and I, we're still, you know, thick as thieves, I guess you could say. We're really good friends, and we're just always really, really tight as kids. The reason I'm saying all that is because there was always a battle in my mind trying to reconcile the things I saw my father doing, and he wasn't an evil person, but just a violent individual. Didn't treat my mother well, and I saw that and thought, man, what a hypocrite! Like how can you preach one thing one day and then come home and then treat your family, you know, the way you treat them, or treat my mother the way you treat her, you know? And so, I actually went to bed most nights as a kid, as long as I can remember. I mean, early childhood, 4 or 5 years old up through, you know, high school, thinking, you know, why, if God is so good, why does the devil always win? That's what I always went to bed thinking, you know, and I would pray to God, and then I would, you know, ask for peace in my life and all these things. But, I just had huge doubts in my mind. I thought, man, if this is true, why is it so terrible? I mean, why is our life so terrible if God is supposed to bring peace into your life? You know, like, it just didn't make any sense to me. And so that's all background, because when I was 10 years old, me and my brother shared a room, and I'm lying in bed. I was asleep, and I woke up just out of a dead sleep. There's no doubt in my mind. I was totally awake, and I sat up in my bed. I was on the top bunk. We had bunk beds. And I look over to my left, and there's a man standing in my room. I mean, right next to my bed, and, had a collared shirt on, had a beard. I always kind of described him kind of like Jack Nicklaus, like the golfer, but with a beard, you know, okay. Very, very, not scary looking. Okay. I was frightened, but as anybody would be with some stranger in their room. Right. And he looked at me very intently, and it's weird because the room was dark, but he was not dark. So it's not like he was producing light, but I could see him well. I don't know how to describe that, but, it wasn't necessarily luminescent, but I could see him even though there was no light in the room. Okay. It's still lights are on. And, he looked at me and he said, David, don't talk to God. And I'm just sitting there. I'm just trying to take, I'm like, what is going on? This is crazy. You know, I'm frightened, very scared. And then he looks at me, didn't stop looking at me, but it's almost like he re-intently looked at me again and said, David, do not talk to God anymore. And he disappeared. And that was it. And I'm awake. You know, this is not me dreaming. I wake up. No, I'm awake the whole time. He disappears from in front of me. And, I probably laid there or sat there for a good 20, 30 minutes before I had shaken the fright off of me enough to get up out of bed, go wake my mother up. Okay. Tell her, I'm just very scared. I'm sweating. And she says, what happened? And I told her what happened. And she said, well, what did he say? And I said, I told her what he said. And she said, well, what do you think you should do? And I said, I think I should still talk to God. I think I should still pray and talk to God. And she said, I think so too. She said, the next time that happens, next time anything scary happens like that, you just say, in the name of Jesus, go away, or leave me alone, or whatever the circumstance, but say in the name of Jesus, because she said, I believe that a demon has come and tried to talk to you or was talking to you. And they're trying to scare you. They're trying to prevent you from whatever it is, you know, they're trying to control you. And said, I said, okay. So this began a series of events that probably over the next a few months. And the next thing that happened was we had watched JFK. I can't remember the filmmaker's name, but JFK came out and Kevin Costner was in it, and it was on TV, and it was just this, I don't know why it freaked me out, but it was just scary to me for some reason. There was footage of, you know, John F. Kennedy being assassinated.
Right.
So that night I went to bed, and I woke up, same thing, except I didn't see anything initially, but I heard a horse galloping towards me, and I'm wide awake. I'm not dreaming. I hear as if a horse is galloping or trotting on, well, I guess it's more of a trot, on like a cobblestone street. So like a clop, 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 like that. Right. And, it gets getting louder and louder and closer and closer and closer. And then a figure starts to appear in my room. It was I never saw the face, but it was a dressed in a blue suit, blue top hat. And immediately I just remember what my mother told me, because I'm wide awake. This is not a dream. I can't emphasize that enough. And I just thought, whatever this is, hello, it's not good, you know? And I just said, in the name of Jesus, go away, in the name of Jesus, you know? And it was started very quiet. I mean, my throat was just about seized up. I couldn't talk, so incredibly frightened. And then, and finally it just, the sound of the horse went away, and the figure just backed into the darkness of my room. And that was it. I ran to my mom again, told her what happened. And so those are the two, when I was a kid, visual, I guess you could say, experiences that I had with what I believe to be the demonic realm. And I can go into more of that about that later. I believe, you know, this is a time in my life when I was really struggling with what to believe. Okay. Now, I always believed that, you know, being a Jew, the Bible was true, but a lot of times you just inherit beliefs from your parents. And so at some point in your life, those beliefs have to either become your beliefs, or you toss them aside and say, no, that's, I don't believe that to be true. So, because the reality is that truth is discovered. Truth isn't what we make it to be. Just because you believe something doesn't make it to be true. Just because you want something to be true, your desire something to be true, doesn't make it true. Truth is independent of how you feel about it. It's just the story of reality is what truth is. And truth, all truth is discovered. So at some point, you have to discover truth for yourself. And, you know, a small example would be that, you know, Isaac Newton didn't invent gravity. He discovered gravity. Gravity existed before he discovered it. Okay. And if you stop believing in gravity, does that mean you float away? No, of course not. Gravity is, it is a truth. Whether you believe it or not, you're affected by it. And that's how all truth is. And so at that period of my life, I was really questioning, not even whether things were true, but just the consistency of what people were telling me were true, which I thought factually were true. That is, that the Bible is true, that there was a person named Jesus, that he was the perfect Jew sent, you know, into the world to save the world and reconcile God back to reconcile the world back to himself, back to God. But, you know, that's all fine and dandy within your head. But when it's lived out in front of you in a way that is just so the opposite of what it should be, that's where I was. And I think, you know, without verbalizing it, I think that the adversary of God, also known as Lucifer or Satan, however you want to say it, he is intent, you know, on making people stray from the umbrella of God, if you will. That is, he does not want you to believe in God. He doesn't want you to believe that this person Jesus existed. Because he's called the adversary for a reason. He's the antithesis, the adversary of God. And so he uses demonic influence. He uses, you know, fallen angel influence to direct people away from the truth. And I think that's what was happening to me. I think that I was getting oppressed in a certain way. For whatever reason, I don't know. I mean, if anything, it just drove me towards belief and reliance on God to protect me. So for whatever reason, though, those two things happened. I also think that later in life, it's helped me talk to people who have had similar circumstances or visitations or encounters, if you will, to try to work through them and say, hey, you know, I think, you know, this is perhaps what happened, you know, and try to get them some peace and understanding about what happened. So when I was a kid, those were two of the things that stick out the most. There was other times where I felt oppression, where I would wake up in cold sweats and feel like there was a demonic presence in the room. And that's one thing that stayed with me. Whenever there's a feeling that I, when I say feeling, like there was a presence accompanying those two encounters that I have felt multiple times throughout my life, that's the same every single time. And it's like, I know the presence of evil is near me. It's almost like when you smell chocolate cake, you know what chocolate cake smells like. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, before we go any further, let me ask you, when this demonic entity is there and it's speaking to you and tells you don't talk to God anymore, I want to ask you this question. This is like a theoretical question that I often think about, and I've never really asked anybody this question before, so I'm interested to hear your thoughts on it. Do you think the whole purpose behind that could be that somehow, you know, the enemy knew your potential in life and what kind of direction you could go, and they were trying to deter you from that? I mean, basically negating the effect that you could have had, that you were going to have on people's lives later on in life by trying to get you when you're young and telling you not to talk to God. You know, because basically my thought behind that is, you know, so Satan, Lucifer, as you mentioned earlier, has been around a long time. He's been around a really long time. And
yeah,
sometimes I wonder, does he see traits in children that are similar to traits in other people who grew up to do certain things in life for God? Is there triggers that he can identify in kids as they're young and be like, I need to deter this kid while he's young so that he will not turn in to what, you know, for lack of better names, Billy Graham turned into. Most people know who that is. So,
sure.
I ask you that question. Do you think that's a possibility? Because that, I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily saying they know the future, right? Because I don't think that's what that's saying. I think it's more identifying traits in people and knowing that those certain traits usually turn into certain things. Does that make sense at all?
Yeah, it does. That's a really good question. And I think there's kind of different facets of an answer, I guess, that come to my mind. One is, and it's funny because I was just reading something earlier today regarding this, but throughout Scripture, you see God actually uses sometimes the enemy to direct his people in a certain direction. So this is probably the most obvious case is Job. Okay, so God allows the Satan, Ha-Satan, which means the adversary, whether or not it's Lucifer or not, no one really knows. But it's basically, you know, an adversary of God to come into Job's life and disrupt it through demonic influence, if you will. And demonic is a whole other, you know, term that we can talk about or whatever. But so the other thing is with Paul, Paul is when he is caught up to the third heaven, is in the New Testament writings. Afterwards, he talks about it, I think it's in 2 Corinthians, in his epistles to the Corinthians, about how he boasts in his affliction. And he talks about after he was caught up to the third heaven, that is his he goes and basically to heaven and meets with God, whether in the body or out of the body, he said he doesn't know. But after that, he is sent a thorn in the flesh from the devil to afflict him. By whom? By God. And the reason being so that he boasts in, it's basically to keep him humble. So that's one kind of a theological way, I guess you could look at it, is sometimes God uses the enemy to direct people back towards him and to keep them on track. I don't know if that's what was happening, but the other answer I would have is when I think about your question, like I said, it was a good question, is although Satan doesn't know the future, he does know God's plan for the future because God's told everybody. So biblically speaking, you know, God uses the Jewish people in a very specific way. And so he separates them out of the nation of Israel in order to bring the Messiah through them so that through the death of the Messiah, the whole world, the whole Gentile world is brought back to him under one roof, if you will. Okay. And so Jewish people like myself, who also are believers in the Messiah, I think are just even a greater target for the devil because, you know, God uses Jewish believers. I believe in Scripture, it's very clear. And all the apostles were Jews. The whole new early church was Jewish. And everyone knows that the Jewish people have been the target of Satan from the beginning. I mean, whether you're even believing God or not, it's obviously that the Jews, there's some kind of hatred for the Jews that goes beyond every rational explanation. And so I just personally think that, I believe this to be true. It's just not my, it is my opinion, but I believe it's based on, you know, some objective facts that Satan just hates the Jewish people. And so he really hates Jews that believe in Jesus, which I'm one of. And at that point in my life, you know, I wasn't really, you know, I knew the facts, but I hadn't really put my trust in it. I hadn't put my trust in Messiah. So I think you definitely have a good point that he certainly may try to get people at a certain age based upon he knows where the plan is going. He's trying to disrupt that plan, God. And so he's going to do everything he can to do that.
Yeah.
And people who aren't seeking, you know, kids that aren't seeking that, you know, pretty, I mean, you can put 10 kids in a room and realize real quick which kids are thoughtful and care about other people and which kids just want to disrupt and misbehave and don't care about that kind of stuff. So I mean, I don't think it's any different from the supernatural realm if you're looking at individuals to see which ones are going to be the troublemakers as far as not on your side or on your side, if that makes sense. So.
Absolutely. And what you said a few minutes ago, you know, about how God allows certain things to happen maybe to keep you on the right path. You know, maybe that's something that was going on. I mean, you said that about how, you know, your home life was very hypocritical and, you know, being in that environment, you know, could easily turn somebody into the product of their environment. And so maybe something telling you, it's some kind of entity coming to you and saying, don't talk to God, which is directly against your nature. Maybe that's just a push in the right direction for you to be like, I know that's a lie, so I'm going to go the opposite, complete opposite direction of that.
Yeah. Well, that actually makes, I mean, you know, my creator knows me well, and I'm the most stubborn person on the planet. If someone tells me not to do something, guess what? I'm going to do it. I'm just going to be like, okay, Yeah, I'm going to have to do that now. So,
yeah.
So, yeah. But, yeah. So that's, yeah. Good well, stuff.
I mean, the description that you gave earlier with the hat and everything, have you ever heard the people talking about the Hat Man?
No.
Okay. So there's people, there's a lot of people, and obviously there's a lot of people, they call him the Hat Man, but there's a lot of people out there that talk about seeing a shadow entity that doesn't have a face, but you can tell it's wearing, like, a lot of times it's Victorian clothing or a long trench coat with, like, either a top hat or some kind of fedora. But it's character where it's like either he usually comes to children, and he is either usually peaceful and a child is not, like, feeling threatened at all, or he's extremely scary and the kid has a horrifying experience. But it's a common description where they say that he's a shadow figure that has a top hat. And I actually first heard about this whole Hat Man thing on another podcast called Into the Fray with Shannon LeGros. And I heard the show that she did, and I was talking to my wife about it. We were driving to Jersey. We had like an hour and a half drive, and I started talking to her about it right away when we sat down in the car. And so I turned on the show to let her hear it. And I look over and her face is just like horrified. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like she's getting scared. So I turned it off and I asked her, are you okay? And she's like, yeah, I'm fine. It's just what they're talking about, I saw as a kid. And I was like,
really?
I was like, we've been married for almost 10 years. And you're just telling me this now, you know, like what is this? And so she proceeded to tell me a story of when she was a little girl and she was sick at home, and her mom left to go get more medicine from the store. She's by herself, and she saw this shadow figure entity in her house, in the standing in a doorway. And the only thing she could do was hide under the covers. But she was terrified. And, you know, we actually did a show. I think it was like episode 3. We did a show on it where I had her on and we talked about it. And, you know, I just, when you said that, it just reminded me of that common, you know, story that a lot of people share about the Hat Man. And, you know, I believe that these, entities, a lot of them are demonic. And so, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if multiple people are seeing the same thing in various locations.
Yeah. Well, I got chills. That's crazy. You know, and it's something that it's extremely frightening. I mean, even as an adult, I think back and it's scary. You know, and, I pray over my kids every night, pray protection over them, that God would keep evil from them. And, I think it's extremely important. And I know most of your, many of your listeners, you know, are probably go, whatever, you know, this guy's religious opinion or whatever, which is fine. I understand that. But I would just say, you know, that, you know, when it comes down to it, you have to ask yourself some questions. And some of those questions would be, okay, you know, if you have seen something like this, I guess there's enough people. I always kind of go back to Bigfoot, if you will, like Sasquatch, you know, there's enough people out there. You can't discredit all of their, you know, there's something going on. Okay.
Right.
There's some entity out there running around the woods. We don't know what it is. You know, we can discuss it all we want or whatever. But you know, something is happening. Okay. So people around the world, as far as these kinds of circumstances, like the Hat Man, okay, they're seeing something. It's consistent, somewhat consistent all over the world, different age groups, different kinds of people seeing it. Okay. And I guess my point is it's not physical. This is not materialism. Okay. There is something beyond the physical world. And so the next logical question is, okay, well then what is beyond the physical world? And so then it gets into, okay, of all of the world views out there, what best explains this phenomena? I mean, what supernatural entity cares whether I talk to God or not? You know what I mean?
Right.
So, it's just, you know, my logical conclusion is that these are, demonic influences. And I also think that the supernatural realm it's much greater and much deeper and much more, I want to say real, because I believe that we're created to be physical beings, but you know, even as individuals, we're two spiritual, one part physical. We have a body, we have a soul, we have a spirit. So 2/3 of our being are spiritual and just 1/3 is physical. So there's a whole realm out there that I think is very dangerous to seek out. But at the same time, when it does affect you as an individual, you're going to want to have some answers, you know, and all I know is every time I've had an encounter like those or that presence of evil, when I say the name Jesus the Messiah, it flees. And that is one name under heaven where all darkness flees, which is very powerful. And I encourage anybody, you know, that whether you believe in Christianity or not, it's the name of Jesus, the Messiah, carries with it great weight and great power, whether or not you ascribe him to be who he says he was or not. So.
Right. And I often say this, and I'll say it again, a lot of times what people call paranormal, I call supernatural. Like, that's where I, that's how I approach my show, because there's a lot of people that I talk to that we may not agree totally on, you know, the source of what they're experiencing, but we both, obviously they agree, but I absolutely agree. And I believe them. They're seeing something, they're experiencing these things. It's just, we define it differently. And, you know, I don't know, like, do you think that there has been, or, and then we're getting into, cover up and stuff. So I don't know, you know, what your thoughts are on this, but do you think to some extent there has been a conscious effort to direct culture and society away from the acknowledgement of there being a soul and a spirit makeup of our bodies, you know, the 2/3, the other 2/3 of what we're made up of. I mean, what you said there is a very foreign idea and concept to so many people. They're like, what do you mean? I heard that we're 75% water. What are you talking about? And so, exactly. So, I mean, do you think to a certain extent there has been an effort to move our consciousness away from the reality of what we're truly made up of?
Oh, without question. Without question. I wouldn't put it on a level as like, you know, conspiracy theory, like, you know, for like JFK assassination, go back to that example, right? There's so many theories on that, conspiracy theories, and there's been cover-up. I mean, I think it's unquestionable there's been cover-ups regarding that. But the reality is that the line that's propagated by all public school and science, that is mainline science, is materialism. The other side of the coin is naturalism, which basically says that we are merely molecules in motion. And as Richard Dawkins says, famous atheist, biologist, we're just molecules in motion, and we all just dance to our DNA. That is, there's no difference between you and the ant that you accidentally stepped on the way to work. There's zero difference. It's just that somehow you ended up being molecules in motion that make you a human being, or what we would describe as a human being. And then the ant just happened to end up looking like an ant. But even the rock next to the ant that you squashed, there's really no difference between you and the rock. It's just molecular makeup. That's it. And so that, under that worldview, which is, you know, a Darwinian evolutionist worldview, there is no room for the supernatural world. We are just, there is only physical. That's it. Which philosophically, you run into every problem under the sun if that's true. Because if that's true, there's actually no way to prove that that's true. Because reason and consciousness don't even exist. Because molecules in motion can't make decisions. Molecules in motion can't come to conclusions. I mean, molecules in motion don't have the laws of logic to reason out what's true and false, because at that level, there is no true, there is no false, there is no wrong, there is no right. There's no difference between raping a baby for fun and being Mother Teresa, because under the Darwinian evolutionist worldview, where materialism is all there is, all we are is molecules in motion, from the zoo to you, if you will, or from amoeba to man, right? there is nothing of consequence. And so once you impart or once you import an outside entity that becomes the creator, that you now have imported morality. And because without an outside objective source of morality, there is no morality. And so what the predominant worldview of today is, whether it's the United States or communist China or, communist fascist Russia, if you will, is that materialism is all there is. And so because of that, the supernatural world can't exist. And so I would say it's just a byproduct, if you will, of the materialistic Darwinian evolutionistic worldview. So is it a cover up? I don't think it's a cover up, but is it absolutely fought against from that perspective of mainline science and mainline political persuasion, I guess you could say? I would say absolutely.
That's a very thorough answer. I really appreciate you sharing that.
I know
that sounds corny to say it like that, but I'm sitting here thinking, okay, I'm getting it. I'm feeling it. with what you said, though, no room for the supernatural realm within the scientific community. When you said that, my mind just went off in a total different direction, and I started thinking about the CERN facility. If people don't know what CERN is, you can go online and check it out. It's, Google it, CERN. You're going to get a lot of different results, read through it and watch some YouTube videos and decide for yourself what you think CERN is. But it is a real place. As far as I understand, in a trucker's terms, it's some kind of particle accelerator that is about, I believe, 17 miles in length. It actually is underground between, I believe, France and Switzerland. And they do a lot of, it's one of the, I think it's the most expensive machine ever built to man. And basically, there's a lot of scientists over there doing a lot of different experiences or experiments. But the scientists that are over there are experiencing some things, and you're getting some leaked emails coming out. Whether they're authentic or not, I don't know. But you're getting,
right.
you're getting these emails and notes being leaked out from CERN, supposedly, that they're opening portals by doing these, by smashing these particles together, and things are coming through these portals. Now, that's rocking the scientists' worldview, because the supernatural is not supposed to exist. What they're literally, if this is true, I mark all this with if it is true, they're literally experiencing what isn't supposed to exist by their own scientific definition. And so when put that in your pipe and smoke it, because talk about rocking you. I mean, it's like if somebody were an atheist and God appears right before him, it's literally something like that for a scientist who has these, they know what they believe. They know what is true. And all of a sudden, everything they know is true is thrown out the window in a very dramatic fashion.
Right.
I don't know if a lot of people out there know about CERN or not. I've, done a lot of YouTube videos while I'm driving the truck kind of thing, but that's kind of how my mind shot off when you said that, because it's true. There is no room for the supernatural when you live in the scientific community.
Right. Yeah. And it comes from many centuries of philosophical thought that's been affected by guys like David Hume, and Immanuel Kant. David Hume, one of his famous I can't remember what they're called. It's like a, I can't remember, but basically he just said that miracles aren't possible. And the reason is because miracles aren't possible. I mean, miracles aren't possible because All that we know is natural. Only the material world exists. Therefore, the supernatural does not exist. Therefore, miracles aren't possible. So I think any layman can see that that's circular reasoning. But that's how scientists approach things. That, well, no, this can't be true. This seemingly supernatural effect or cause can't be true because materialism is true because matter is all there is. And so, yeah, with these CERN scientists, and I haven't, you've probably done more reading on it than I have, but yeah, the Hadron Collider, and they smash particles together and see what happens. And this is where we get the Higgs boson and this field of basically the smallest thing that we know. And now they're smashing particles in, and it seems like some are escaping into, we don't know.
Right.
We were actually losing matter, which goes against the first law of thermodynamics, which is the conservation of matter. You know, matter is neither gained or lost in the universal closed system, if you will. So it's extremely interesting because now, like you said, they are confronted with this reality that they didn't think was possible.
Yeah. I just find that stuff interesting. I mean, I go all over the place when I'm at work, obviously. I mean, I drive truck 12 hours a day, so all I have is time. You know, I just listen to tons of podcasts, tons of YouTube videos, and I go all over the place. Sometimes I dabble with, you know, conspiracy theories and CERN and all that stuff, whatever kind of mood I'm in. But, you know, I wanted to ask you, kind of backtracking here, back to your experience when you were a kid, and then we can kind of fast forward into some other things that you've experienced in life. But when it came to talking to your mom, you went into your mom's room, told her what happened. She told you how to respond. Was there any follow-up with that? Or did your mom just kind of let that whole thing go? Or did you ever go
you
back
know,
to her and talk about
funny.
It?
That's funny. There was zero follow-up.
Okay.
There was no follow-up whatsoever. Now, if, and who knows why? I mean, I can speculate. If my kids ever had an experience like that and they told me about it, I would do follow up with them because she might've just thought I had a bad dream, you know, oh, right. He probably had a bad dream. What do you think? Okay. Go back to bed. I'm tired. I got three kids. I got to make you breakfast in 2 hours, you know? So, that's probably what was going through her mind. You know what I mean? So yeah, there wasn't any follow up with that.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Cause I mean, I'm the same way. I mean, we got our first kid coming this year. And you know, you think about things like this a lot, you know, and you know, as it is right now, I walk around my house praying over it. And when I have a kid, I'll probably do it twice, you know, so.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, if my kid were to come to me and say, Daddy, I saw this in my room, or, you know, I was outside, you know, a teenager comes home and says, hey, I was walking down the driveway and there was these three huge lights hovering above the house. Well, what was that about? And, you know,
like
for me, and maybe it's because who I am, and obviously I'm paying attention to these kind of things. There would be tons of follow-up, and I would probably want to escort my kids out of the house next time and all that stuff, you know? And, I was curious about that because everybody has different responses to these kind of things. Like sometimes parents don't believe, sometimes parents tell you how to respond, but they don't follow up. Sometimes parents are oversensitive and they push the kid away by prodding at it and saying, you know, asking them questions that the kid doesn't even know. And it just scares the kid more. So, you know, I was just curious about that. But, you know, why don't you walk us into some of the other things you've experienced? And because like I said, I know you experienced something recently. I don't know if there's anything in between that you'd like to talk about.
Yeah. No, nothing, visual or anything like that. I mean, I've definitely had, like I said, what I call like, oppression, episodes where I woke up at certain periods and, you know, I would just feel totally stuck to my bed, like oppressed, not sleep paralysis because I could move. But just the presence of evil was there. It's just like it was with me. And I would just, you know, I would just say in the name of Jesus or in the name, you know, I'm a Jew, so we say Yeshua, but the name of Yeshua, you know, go away, or lech lecha, which is get out of here, like go. And so that's happened many times. I mean, many times. My wife's had that experience. She had a couple of experiences where, which her brother actually had too, in a similar time period where she was alone. We used to live in Pennsylvania. And we lived in this old house. It was, from the 1830s or 40s. There was actually a double homicide in the house in the 70s. that was kind of creepy.
Yeah.
But one night she was there and then all the windows were open. Not opening, that would have been freaky. but it was a spring night in Pennsylvania, really nice. And someone was walking around the house whistling. and she kept looking out and couldn't see anyone there whistling. But someone was just whistling, like whistling this tune. And she said it just chilled her to her core. Well, she ended up talking to her brother about this, who was living out in, we were living in Bucks County, and she was living in Westchester at the time. And the same thing happened to him. So that's just kind of this weird, bizarre thing. And she said it was just felt very evil and that kind of thing. So, you know, I don't get, you know, take that for what it is. Some kind of, maybe there's a whistler man out there that I don't know about, you know.
Yeah, and it's,
maybe, you know, I don't know.
It's so local to me. I'm intrigued.
Yeah, right. But, but kind of fast forward, now it's been probably, I don't know, maybe 8 months ago. I have a theory, and I don't know whether it's true or not. You know, it's totally non-falsifiable, if you will. But it kind of plays into, time and time again, the Hebrew scriptures talk about God commands the Israelite people not to do any kind of divination. That is, trying to contact spirits, not to use witchcraft, not to use sorcery, because these are all things from Lucifer. They're all things from the devil. And so you're actually dealing with things that you have no idea the effect. And so there's a famous story in the Bible where Saul, King Saul, wants to know what's going to happen in a battle the next day. So he goes outside of Israel proper and finds this witch. She's called the Witch of Endor. And he asks her to call up and see what's going to happen. And she ends up calling Samuel, the prophet, who's been dead now. He calls up Samuel, and so he uses a medium, okay, a witch. And Samuel says, you know what? I'll tell you what's going to happen. Because you did this, you're going to die tomorrow. That's what's going to happen, you know? And sure enough, Saul and Jonathan die the next day. Saul and his son. So, Beit Sha'an. So that's a place in Israel, Beit Sha'an. But that's where they fell in battle. The point being, I think when you start, and this is where I caution myself and I caution other people, when you start researching these kinds of subjects, in other words, when you start trying to figure out what the enemy is doing, the enemy gets pissed. They don't like that.
Absolutely.
And every time that I've tried to do more research or study this subject, I've only had bad things happen. Like just either, like I said before, like demonic oppressions or what have you, really bad dreams, extremely scary dreams. Leads up to, I started reading Exo Vaticana by Tom Horm and Chris Putnam. And unfortunately, Chris Putnam just passed away this year. He's a pretty young guy. He's like 52 years old, but, so they wrote a book called Exo Vaticana, which deals with kind of the Catholic Church's obsession with extraterrestrial activity. And there's a long history, even going back into the Middle Ages, of the Catholic Church having doctrine on if we did find extraterrestrial life, that what we would do about it. And actually, under the Catholic doctrine, all things that God could do, he would do. So if he could create life on other planets, he would create life on other planets, because the nature of God is, at least according to them, which I don't agree with, but according to them, their definition of the nature of God says that because he has to expound upon everything he could possibly do to glorify his name, he would. So they've always had a doctrine of that there is ET out there and that they are most likely benevolent, yada, yada, yada. Okay. So I started reading this book, started doing some more research on it. Into what, you know, obviously, you know, people are seeing something, whether it's actual aliens, extraterrestrials, or whether they're demonic entities. There's a debate going on. I fall into the category of demonic entities. Actually scientific reasons, which I can go into if you want me to later. But basically, you know, some people think that aliens are from other planets, that they actually that traveled here. Some people think they're interdimensional, which I would say that they're just demonic. Okay. So I started doing all this research and reading that book and some other material and from other guys it's really well written, and I think it's a good book for your listeners that, you know, if they're into that, if they think that might be interesting. This is actually very interesting, the book, Exo Vaticana. But I started having bad dreams and demonic dreams, like dreams with gray aliens in them and stuff. And I had never, now I'm thinking, okay, I'm just this book. It's kind of this weird book and it's got talking about aliens and stuff. That just makes sense. You know, when you, sometimes when you dream, you sleep, you're just trying to work out stuff, but it was more than just, you know, subject matter dreams about aliens. You know, they were scary, very, very scary. And so this all culminated, and I actually stopped reading the book after this because it freaked me out so much. like I said, about 8 months ago, I'm in my bed. I wake up because that presence, like I said, chocolate cake. I smell it. I know what it is. The demonic presence is in my room, and I feel something pulling at my legs. And I look over, and there are two small gray entities pulling at me. And they're literally, I'm getting pulled off the bed. And it was almost like, it was beyond physical. I don't even know how to describe it. It wasn't that some pulling on my sheets or pulling on my foot. It was like, almost like pulling at my being. And I immediately, I couldn't get anything else out but Yeshua, which is Jesus in Hebrew. And I just said, Yeshua, Yeshua, like that. And I start screaming, and they disappeared. Boom, gone. And my wife wakes up and she said, what's going on? Like, what happened? What happened? And I had a bad dream. I had a bad dream, but I was totally awake. And, after that, I walked through my whole house and I just prayed and called for protection over my house. It was extremely frightening. Now, I'm sure some people who believe in alien abduction say I might have been trying to be abducted. I don't believe that at all. That was the experience. Extremely frightening. I mean, I'm just thinking about it now. I'm sweating, but that's what happened.
Wow. So these gray entities, did they look like your classic grays?
I would say close. I don't know. You know, they were probably. I feel like they were smaller. Maybe they were probably 2.5-3 feet tall. I don't know what your classic gray alien size is, you know, but, they seemed more transparent. They were definitely transparent. I mean, more, ghost-like, if you will, less, more spiritual than physical, if that makes sense. So I know a lot of times descriptions, you know, people see gray aliens, very physical, very flesh and blood kind of a entity. This was not like that. Yeah.
So when they were pulling at you, could you physically feel them pulling at you?
Well, that was the weird thing is that it's not like this is what I can't even, it's hard to describe. When I say it was almost like they were pulling, there was almost like they were pulling at my spiritual self, my non-physical body. Like, but the weird thing is when my leg was being pulled off the bed, but it's almost like they weren't totally physical. So what they were pulling on as far as what I was connected to wasn't totally physical either. I don't know if that makes any sense. I don't know. I mean, it's really hard to describe.
It kind of does, because if you rewind a little bit in the show and how you talked about what we're made up of, you know, 2/3, you know, our physical, spiritual, and our soul. That's what you said, right?
Right.
Okay, so
right.
If they're pulling at something that's not in the physical but still part of us, that kind of makes sense with how you described it. You know, they're pulling at you, but just not the physical part of you, something else.
Right.
I don't know if that's theologically correct. I don't know, but I mean, that's just kind of how
I think so. I mean, look, throughout scripture, we see time and time again, you know, we're mind, body, and spirit. And our flesh is just, a very small portion of our being. Saul, you know, Shaul, the apostle Paul is mostly people know him by, he talks about lots of things regarding the flesh and the spirit. You know, when he talks about sin, he's talking about how he in his spirit, he doesn't want to sin, but in his flesh, he sins. And so basically, you know, the physical nature of us and how we are and the state that we're in after the fall of man, you know, our physical body just wants to sin, even though our spirit is willing, you know, as he says, the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. So, I mean, there's this weird, you know, triunity about us, that we are physical and we are spiritual, and they're commingled in like this perfect, you know, relationship, but they're separate at the same time. And that's, you know, a lot of times people talk about God that way. And a very Jewish concept, by the way, of God being a unity in nature, and he's triune in nature. He's spirit. He's Shekinah, which is the glory, which is the second part of the Godhead. And then there's Yahweh, the Father. So, but they're all one, which in Hebrew we call Echad. So it's a term that means unity, one, many in one. So I mean that's. You know, I'm yapping on and on about this, but yeah, it does kind of make sense, I guess.
Okay. No, I mean, I appreciate you going into the detailed stuff, because I mean, that's information that, you know, I don't really come across a ton, and I'm sure not a lot of people do. So, you know, we're here for educational purposes as well.
Yeah. Well,
have you heard about the Pope stating that he would baptize aliens if he, I guess, had the opportunity to, or something like that? Have you heard about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And that was more of a recent, you know, headline with the current Pope. But it's not a new concept. I mean, this is something that the Catholic Church has always, I mean, this is something you can find in Catholic dogma going back probably 1,000 years, and if not farther. But certainly since the Middle Ages, or before the Middle Ages. So yeah, he came out about it, but you know, actually I talked to a Catholic priest, maybe 4 or 5 months ago. We had a guy came on and talked to our group at UNCW, and he's a Catholic priest, and somebody asked him about that. And he said, and he volunteered the information. He's like, oh yeah. He's like, oh yeah, that's a common, yeah. I mean, it's not controversial. That's what Catholics have always thought. And so, yeah, they just think that now. I think he might have said something to the effect of wanting to change some kind of get ready for the inevitability of it, if that makes sense. But yeah, it's not something bizarre to the Catholic world, if you will.
That's really interesting, because I thought that was something new, but apparently that's something that's been taught for a while.
Yeah.
So from your perspective, when it comes to that, you know, L.A. Marzulli talks a lot about, you know, the fact that aliens will come, but they're going to say that, you know, we put you here thousands of years ago or millions of years ago, and we planted you here, and we're here to fix the species of humanity because you guys royally messed it up. And what are your thoughts on that line of thinking that, you know, aliens do exist? Obviously, to a certain extent, you definitely believe that they exist because you saw grays in your room, but just the definition of what you saw differs from other people. But do you think that's maybe a narrative that could play out where, you know, that we do see aliens come to this earth, you know, with a certain message, but I don't know like how to frame that question other than just throwing it out there and seeing what you want to do with reaction to it.
Yeah. Well, it's a very popular, line of thinking within Darwinian evolutionistic thinking, and it's something that Richard Dawkins has talked about and other atheists have talked about, and it's a concept of panspermia. That is, that aliens planted life on this planet, and then they're going to come back, or maybe this is them trying to come back and contact us, you know. So will that play out in the future? It may play out in the future as entities coming and saying that they are something, but they're not. I don't think that they're physical beings. I don't think that it's just this other kind of race of humanoid out there in the great expanse of the universe. But you know, there's something called the Great Deception in the Bible, and Jesus talks about it. And basically that every person will fall away, if it, you know, even the elect, if it were possible, that is even believers in the God of Israel, if it were possible. But the reason why I reject the idea that there's a physical humanoid entity out in the universe actually has nothing to do with scripture. Michael Heiser, who we had on our program, and I've discussed with this topic with him, and personally, is that is off the air, so I won't quote him or anything like that. But basically, you know, he doesn't have a problem with there being ET out there in the universe. And I would like to maybe discuss that with him further, because the scientific implications of the possibility of that happening are so remote that really no one takes it seriously. And what I mean by that is that if you just consider our planet, okay, there's something known as the anthropic principle, which basically states that we live in a zone perfectly created for life as we know it, of every shape and kind. So where our planet is, the size it is, the distance from the sun, the other planets in our solar system, and even the distance of each star from each other in relation to us in the entire universe is perfect for life on this planet. Okay? So if you did all the math, which I'm not a mathematician, but I've read a lot about how they come up with this number, but there was an article recently released, and I can't remember the name of the article, but people can Google it, I'm sure. But the probability of Earth existing, how we exist for life, there should be exactly 0.7 planets in the entire universe that have what we have. So in other words, the probability of Earth existing is less than 1%. I'm sorry, there should be less than one planet Earth in the solar system. There should be 0.7 planet Earth. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the probability of even us existing isn't a probability. So when you extrapolate that out, the probability of another one is so remote that you would have not only one alien culture, but it seems multiple alien cultures. If you look at how they... all the different descriptions of them, the different kinds of crafts that they have, all that kind of stuff. It seems that there would be multiple civilizations of alien life in the universe, which even just mathematically is so far beyond the realm of probability. It's really even tough to entertain. And so that's kind of where I come in on the whole, is ET physical? Is it an actual living, breathing, physical entity in the universe? I think just on the basic facts that we can even tangibly get our hands on, you'd have to say no.
Wow, I've never heard that before. I mean, literally, us here on planet Earth, according to just the numbers, math, defies literally all odds. You know, like we mathematically shouldn't exist. That's
right.
That's pretty incredible, actually.
There are numbers. John Lennox, who I would encourage everybody to get a hold of some of his material. He's a pure mathematician. He's a professor at Oxford, he's an apologist. So he writes a lot of material, kind of basically defending that God exists. And he's debated Richard Dawkins, and you can find that on YouTube. Pretty fascinating. He debated him a couple times, but anyway. He talks about just the initial beginnings of the universe, whether you think it was the Big Bang or what do you think it was. So scientists say it was the Big Bang that caused it, or whether you think it was creation, whatever, doesn't matter. The initial circumstances for the Big Bang, the probability of those initial circumstances existing, that is, once you have space, time, and matter. So how do you even get space, time, and matter? Unless you're a theist, there's no way of getting to that. There, you cannot have something from nothing. It's impossible. So what's the definition of nothing? What, as Aristotle said, what rocks dream about? Okay, that's the definition of nothing. Nothing. Okay. So, but the initial conditions, if the probability of those happening, if you were to begin to write the number, so it's 0.00000, and you just started writing zeros for the probability of this happening. if you began to write the number, there would not be enough particles in the universe that if you wrote a zero on every particle, there would not be enough particles in the universe to write the number. That's the kind of probabilities that we're talking about. It's probabilities that only exist in math because math is infinite.
That's incredible. That's incredible. Wow. What was his name again?
John Lennox.
John Lennox. Wow. Yeah. I'm personally going to definitely look him up and stuff. That's great stuff.
Oh man. There's tons of great YouTube stuff for you while you're driving.
Perfect.
Trust me. You'll be very highly entertained for sure.
The more listening material, the better my day goes.
Right.
So let me ask you real quick here, rewinding a little bit to this most recent experience you had, your wife, you know, you initially told her it was just a dream, you know, and you walk around the house, praying over the house. At what point did you tell your wife what you experienced and what was her reaction? I'm assuming underneath the context that I'm assuming you told your wife.
Yeah, I didn't tell her. If she listens to this, she'll find out. You know, I think that as a husband, as a father, I think there's certain burdens that you have to bear sometimes. And, you know, and there's stuff that happened to me when I was a kid that, you know, I you're just now getting around to tell her about, because, you know, it's just some things are buried so deep and some things are so scary. I think sometimes that personally speaking, I think I would just rather carry them and burden them than frighten her or my children or something like that. You know, now if something like that happens to them, then I can better deal with it. I can say, okay, here's my story. This is what happened. This is what I think what happens. And this is how you deal with it. You know? So yeah, to answer your question, she doesn't know.
Wow. I didn't expect that.
People know. I have friends of mine, you know, other, close buddies that I've told, but, you know, not her. She won't sleep for a month if I told her.
That's understandable. You know, I'm just so chatty. You know, if that happened to me, I can't imagine not telling Lindsay what happened to me, because I talk so much, and maybe I need to take a lesson from that and actually, you know, start thinking before I speak.
If she can handle it, and you know, you bear your feelings and your burdens, that's great. And well, you know, I do bear some burdens, you know, but I don't know. To me, there's a line where I just go, maybe I'll hold on to this one, you know?
No, yeah, it's understandable. I mean, whether Lindsay can handle it or not, I don't want to make her sound like a wimp, but there's some things that I think I probably tell her that she wishes I never did tell her. Let's put it that way. You know?
Right.
Because there's a lot of things that, you know, and maybe one day I'll get to it on one of my shows where it's relevant, but there's a lot of information out there that I've come across from sources, not just people on the internet or anything like that. Like literally people that I've talked to, I know, who are in the know. Yeah. And there are things that I know that I'm not supposed to know. And I go and I tell my wife, and afterwards you're like, oh, should I have told her that? But then you're like, well, it's my wife. I can tell her anything, right?
So
maybe there's wisdom in protecting the spouse. But man, I really appreciate you coming on here. Is there anything you'd like to, you know, say parting, you know, ending the show tonight?
Well, yeah, you know, I know you do a lot of stuff on Sasquatch, which I appreciate. And, you know, we're both fans of Wes's show, Sasquatch Chronicles.
Right.
I'm actually toying with the idea of writing a book called Bigfoot and Jesus. And I think that, you know, I think that there's incredibly good evidence, even secular evidence, for the historicity and death and resurrection of this person known as Jesus of Nazareth. And if you compare, but also at the same time, a lot of times you start talking about Jesus to somebody, this is most people. It might as well be you talking to them about your experience with Bigfoot. Okay. I mean, there's that same level of, absurdity, denial, you're a kook, you're crazy. There's the same level of, absurdity, if you will, in people's minds, because it's just become this joke in everyday culture. Jesus is a swear word. It's not, he's not a Lord and Savior, you know, Bigfoot is a joke for a beef jerky commercial. You know, it's not a real right. thing out there, you know. But if you look at it from a purely evidentiary perspective, the case is overwhelming in both categories. And so, you know, when I think about your show and I think about Wes's show, I often think about, you know, all the correlations between eyewitness testimony, embarrassing details, that is, people who tell the most embarrassing things about themselves with no gain whatsoever, other than it's just the truth. And the same things occur in both circumstances, in your Sasquatch encounters and in the eyewitness testimonies of those who saw Jesus crucified, buried, and then resurrected again. And I just find that fascinating. And so, this is still off topic of what we were talking about, but you know, I'm just saying as
fine.
Far as the realm of Bigfoot and then some of the things we were talking about, you know, religion in general, and then, you know, the historicity and whether or not Jesus is who he says he was, the Son of God, and died and was buried and rose again for the sins of the world. It's an interesting correlation. And I think that, people might be interested if you're interested in the subject of Sasquatch, and even demonology, what we were talking about, study of, I mean, I certainly say don't study demons, but just the subject and just the origins of who they are and how not to deal with them and how to deal with them, if you will. There's a great, a wealth of information out there for, I think, the most really important topic that any individual on the planet has to deal with. And that is this person, Jesus of Nazareth, is he who he says he was? And why, 2,000 years later, are there billions of people on the planet that believe this is true? And because really the information and the evidence behind it is so much more overwhelming than Sasquatch. Yet people will believe in Sasquatch way before they even entertain the idea of Jesus. So right. I don't know, I guess that's got my kind of challenge because that's the world I live in. You know, like I said before, you know, I have a podcast that deals with truth and whether or not God exists and the reliability of the Bible and all kinds of questions. You know, if God is good, how can there be evil in the world? And like all these things that people want answers to, you know, we deal with those kinds of subjects but, you know, I'm also interested in Sasquatch and in all these, you know, more paranormal things because they are a reality. They are a reality around us, which is truth, and truth is discovered. And I'm trying to discover all the truth that I can.
Wow. That's really, I mean, that sounds so interesting. I if you do write that book, I mean, I would love to be filled in as you write it because I'm fascinated with how you approached it there because, you know, I kind of give it to you from a different angle here. I mean, I'll tell you a little story. When I first started talking about publicly about, you know, Bigfoot and everything with people in my everyday life, because for a long time I just kept it quiet because I didn't want to have to deal with trying to explain to people why I'm so fascinated with Bigfoot. I mean, I literally had right. a group online on Facebook, you know, Pennsylvania Sasquatch Research, that was growing, and I think it was almost 1,000 members. Yet nobody outside of my wife and family knew I was into the topic. Nobody. And it's yeah. just, I just didn't yeah. feel like dealing with having to explain to everybody, you know, why, you know, because it's not just like, oh, I believe in Bigfoot. It's, I literally have reasons and thought process behind sure. it. And I just didn't feel like dealing with having to explain to every random person that I'm in my everyday life with. Well, when I first started talking about it with people, because I just got to the point where actually what happened was, one of my YouTube videos, a guy at work found, and he was, out of all the guys at work, he was the worst one to find because he doesn't keep secrets and he's the guy who will push buttons. And I was like, well, if he knows, then I might as well just start talking about it. But so I wound up talking about it with people at church and things like that. And it really generated good discussion. And the one time I was talking with maybe 3 or 4 people before church started, and a young kid, I call him a kid, he's probably in his early 20s, a young guy had come over to our table and just kind of first sat down, heard what we were talking about, and he looked at me with this like little, this smirk of disbelief on his face, and he said, "Wait, you believe in Bigfoot?" And in that moment, there were so many thoughts running through my head. They were rushing through my mind. And, and the only thing I said was, "Yep." Because if I would have gone any further, I just didn't want to go there. But the thing is, this is what I wanted to say. Well, one of the things I wanted to say, I'm in a church, a Christian church, where we gather every Sunday to worship literally the invisible God. None of us have ever laid eyes on this God that we worship. We believe that this God exists because of two main reasons. Well, maybe a third if you claim that you've actually been spoken to by God or something like that. But for two main reasons would be you read it in a book or... oh man, now I'm forgetting my second reason.
Or someone told you about it.
Exactly. Thank you. That's, but my point is that you've never laid eyes on this God that you worship. And yet I'm the crazy one because I believe that there are thousands of people out there telling me that they've seen Sasquatch. Everybody has a different story. And a lot of these people are sincere about it. I'm the crazy one, but you come to church every Sunday to worship the invisible God, and you say you believe the Bible, which is filled with supernatural occurrences, and you say you believe all that, but me saying is something as simple as, I believe there could possibly be a primate. Let's just say primate. Let's forget about the woo factor and all that stuff. I say that I believe that there could be possibly a primate, an undiscovered primate wandering around out there. I'm the crazy one. You know? And so I just kind of, when you brought that whole thing up, it kind of made my mind flash back to that, because it's kind of like similar as to what you were saying, where it's like there's correlations here that, you know, if you can connect the dots with.
Yeah, there's correlations. And also I think, you know, kind of going back to my original idea, probably the most important, one of the most important kind of, I guess, takeaways of just that whole idea of the two correlating is for people who believe that Christianity is true, to understand that when they tell other people, they're going to get the reaction like the kid at your table, okay? You're a not-so-crazy person. Because, like you said, it is this invisible thing. It is this thing that we can't tangibly, you know, touch and you know, feel with our five senses, if you will, okay? Of course, you know, God says that his invisible attributes have been known to man from the very beginning, and that we suppress the truth and unrighteousness, that is in our own unrighteousness. That is that we don't want to know God in our sinful nature. I mean, we suppress the truth that he exists. We suppress, when we look at the world around us, that he created it, because it is so obvious, I think, to, those of us who do believe that he is the creator, that obviously this stuff just doesn't randomly happen. I mean, elephants just don't randomly pop into existence, you know? There's the whole crazy factor there and I think it didn't used to be that way. That's the thing. It's something that has come about in the last 150 years where God has become a joke and has been replaced by a Darwinian evolutionistic worldview, which just says like matter is all there is. Therefore, there is no funny thing going run around the woods, because that evolved into something else a long time ago or whatever. There's tons of, you know, you run into all the different explanations or whatever, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah. I find it fascinating, man. Obviously, you know, Bigfoot, that's my wheelhouse. I mean, I kind of got my whole start in all this stuff, you know, looking into that topic. It's funny though, you know, the more you look into one topic, how things can kind of bleed together. You know, when I first started paying attention to Bigfoot online and things like that was really through Sasquatch Chronicles with Wes Germer. And I remember coming across, I decided when I found his podcast, he was probably in the hundreds. And I decided I was going to start at episode one and work my way through it. And I got to the show with Gary Wayne and the Nephilim. And when I read the title, I was like, well, I have no interest in that. and I just passed over. I actually, that was the only episode I ever skipped on Wes's show until, and then I was probably, I don't know, maybe a year ago or something, I went back and I listened to that show, and from that show spawned this whole other wormhole that I started going down. And it's just funny how like a lot of these topics bleed together, and people, I find a lot of times people try to contain this, these things into boxes, and they're like, this is what it has to be because this is what I'm comfortable with. And by doing that, you just kind of basically wipe out the playing field, and there's no rules of engagement, you know? And, I just think that, you know, people kind of need to ease up a little bit when it comes to the Bigfoot thing and all this other stuff. Like, it's okay to think outside the box and allow yourself to wander into other areas outside of Bigfoot if you think it might have some kind of connection. Like the whole Nephilim Bigfoot thing. I mean, people think that there's a possibility that Bigfoot's Nephilim. Do I think that? Not necessarily, no. Is it possible? Maybe. I don't know. I'm still looking into it. But the point is, I'm willing to go there. I'm willing to look into these things. And, you know, obviously that's biblical stuff, so obviously I'm willing to go there. But I'm more than willing to look into the ghost thing, the alien thing, or whatever you want to talk about, because, like you said earlier, people are experiencing these things. And so if they're experiencing them, they should be at least be talked about, you know, just like when I approach the Bible stuff, like, you know, if people have a sincere question about the Bible, that sincere question deserves a sincere response, you know? And so that's the way I view all this stuff. I mean, people are experiencing things, and because they're experiencing things, they deserve my attention, you know, and to be looked at. So that's how I approach things. David, I really appreciate you coming on the show. I'm sorry. I took the last word there. Do you have anything else you'd like to say?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm good. I appreciate you having me on, Tony, and it's been a lot of fun. And enjoy your other shows. Pretty scary sometimes. Sometimes I get more like a daytime listen when I'm working in my shop or something, you know. But I guess my last thing would just be to, I would encourage people that based upon what I think is objective evidence we have, both inside and outside of Scripture, that there is a creator God that has created every single person on this planet for a very specific reason. And they can find their peace and comfort and purpose in Him. And if you seek Him with all of you, He will find you. And that is the God of Israel, the God of the Bible. And, you know, no matter what denomination or whatever else, you know, you want to pin on it, it doesn't really matter. There is truth. Truth is discovered, and you can discover it. And so the purpose of life is to know God and make Him known. And all of these subjects that we've talked about fall under that umbrella of seeking truth and trying to figure out just what in the world is going on. And so I believe it to be objectively true that the Bible is true, and that's where, I gain a lot of my understanding and knowledge of the world around me. I mean, so I don't know. I just encourage people, because I find solace in these encounters that I've had, knowing that the God that created me is in control. And, I understand that might sound like, well, I'm just using it as a crutch. Well, so be it. You know, I find comfort in that. If that's a crutch, fine. I'm a human being, and I'm not perfect, and I need help in my day-to-day life. But without God in your life, when you run into these kinds of things, I just don't even know how you could possibly begin to ground it and even deal with it. And so, I guess that's what I would leave people with, that hope can be found and solace can be found in your Creator.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, and I am Tony Merkel, and I approve that message. So,
thanks, Tony.
Right on, man. Well, David, I really appreciate you coming on, and you know, you got my number, so we can definitely stay in touch. And if anything ever happens, that happens after today, I definitely would like to hear about it. So, really appreciate you coming on tonight.
Well, thanks, Tony. I appreciate you, brother, and have a good night.
All right, man. Take care. Bye. Well, that's the show, everybody. I really hope you enjoyed it. Remember, if you've had an encounter or a story you'd like to share with me, feel free to shoot me an email at theconfessionalspodcast@gmail.com. That's theconfessionalspodcast@gmail.com. Or you can go to the website, theconfessionalspodcast.com, hit the connection section, and you can reach me that way as well. I just want to give a quick shout out to everybody who's been sharing the show on social media. It's been really helping a lot. The show's been growing a ton, and it's only because you guys have been sharing it around with your friends and family. So please continue to do so. Sharing it on Facebook and Twitter is a huge help, and it helps the show grow so much. So thank you very much for doing that, guys. I really appreciate it. And if you haven't heard, we are offering memberships on our website. The memberships is $3 a month. And with that $3, you get a bunch of extra content plus one extra episode a month. Thanks a lot, guys. I really hope you enjoyed this week. Take care. I'll see you next Saturday right here on The Confessionals.